Make the right call for the right Medicare Advantage benefits. Go to MedMutual.com/review to schedule your free Medicare plan review with Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hello and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. We have all heard of the movie, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But as we often know, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. This is the case of the real Texas Chainsaw Murders. Let's get into it. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a film classic. The killer, Leatherface, wears a human skin mask and wields a screaming, flesh-ripping chainsaw as his victims flee in terror. It's a great movie that was inspired in part by serial killer Ed Gein, who we are going to cover here in a few weeks. But like I said, real life is often more terrifying than any film. Now, you guys, I do not pick cases to talk about because, as I've stated many times, I was born and raised in the Mormon church. I left when I was about 38. It's just that for whatever reason, a lot of these really famous cases that I'm interested in and that you guys are interested in and that I want to cover have an element of Mormonism to them. It's wild, I know. And this case does as well. So full disclosure, like I always say, yes, I was born and raised Mormon. I'm not anymore. I always disclose that because I think it's only fair when I'm talking about cases that have to do with that religion. So let's get to the details of this case. It's a very sad case about a very, very evil man. October 28th, 1974. This man, Robert Elmer Cleason, committed a gruesome and heinous act so horrific it seems like something out of a horror film. Robert Cleason had a very difficult life. He was also a criminal with a rap sheet a mile long, and he struggled with mental illness throughout his adulthood. In 1950, when Cleason was 16 years old, he stepped on a rusty nail while hunting in the woods, and his mother took him to the hospital. While waiting for doctors to see him, for some reason, he went berserk. He hit his mother, he went to the car and got a gun, he returned to the emergency room, shooting. No one was hurt, but the outburst landed him in a psychiatric facility until 1952. 1962. Robert works as a sheriff's deputy in New York from 1962 to 1964 before he was fired for being so unstable. It's a little scary that it took 2 years to figure out how unstable he was, but he was fired. After he was fired, he actually shot a man in the foot and jumped bail on that New York charge and fled to Texas. He then went in and out of mental institutions, and after his most recent treatment, was bound and determined never to go back. He had been married and worked as a taxidermist. Why does that make this so much creepier? A violent man who struggles with mental illness out in the Texas desert, killing and stuffing animals. Yeah, like I said, it's a horror story. Anyway, Robert decided that the way to heal his mental health disease was to turn to God. He decided to become a religious man, and after visiting several churches, he visited a Mormon church. 1972. When someone is looking into becoming a member of the Mormon church, they're called investigators. When the church finds out someone is interested in joining, they will send the missionaries to meet with this person and try to get that person to be baptized. Mormon missionaries are usually young men aged 18 through about 22, or less often, young women aged 19 to 25 or so. They can also be retired married couples, but those types of missionaries do not usually go door to door like the younger missionaries do. A pair of male missionaries baptized Robert Cleason, and he became a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Converts to Mormonism are often visited by whatever missionaries are in their area at the time. Mormon missions last 18 months to 2 years. The missionaries are never placed near their hometowns. They're not even placed in their home state. And as missionaries finish their missions, new missionaries are put in their place. This particular area of Texas had two young missionaries assigned to it, and they continued to visit Robert Cleason even after he was baptized and became a member of the church, as is the practice within the church. Mark Fisher, age 19, from Milwaukee, and Gary Darley, age 20, from Simi Valley, California, were serving their missions in Austin, Texas at the time, and they were sent to Robert Cleason's home to visit with him, as he was, like I said, a new convert to the church. Over the course of a few weeks, Robert Cleason and the missionaries Mark and Gary formed a relationship as they visited together. Robert was known as a spectacular liar. He was a known liar. He would tell anyone who would listen that he was a CIA agent, a war hero, an Olympic athlete, a big game hunter, an Air Force pilot, just, you know, all the things that these types of people claim to be. He was such a liar that everyone just kind of ignored these big stories he would tell, the missionaries included. 1973. Robert Cleason was jailed again. He was arrested for shooting and killing a bison. He went to jail for this offense, and as he sat in jail, he became very, very angry that the Mormons didn't help to get him out. He wanted the church to hire and pay for an attorney to represent him. He felt like the church should post his bail. He was mad that the members didn't visit him and bring him food and clothes and toiletries. The longer he sat in jail for this offense, the angrier he got at the Mormons. When he was released after about 6 months, he began telling members of his church how angry he was that the church didn't help him with his legal troubles. When members would explain to Robert that the church does not get involved in legal matters in that way, Robert would become aggressive with the church members. So much so that several of them reported fearing for their safety. Some of the leaders of the local ward then tried to have a conversation with Robert to calm him down, and during this conversation, it became clear to them just how delusional and just how angry Cleason was. They then kind of quietly sent out word to their membership that Robert was dangerous and that members should keep their distance from him. Okay, I'm going to stop here for a second and get on my little soapbox about red flags. Very often in our society, especially among people who want to live a peaceful life and follow certain principles that keep everything nice and polite, red flags are ignored. We ignore them and we ignore them. And then when someone is hurt or killed, we stand around and say, well, you know, what could we have done? Something. You do something. Now, this was almost 50 years ago. I understand it was a different time, but I see this even today. We have people here in my small city of about 200,000 people that have long-standing records of unbalanced and dangerous behavior, behavior that's well-publicized and in the press, people who have been menacing and threatening to our political leaders and other citizens, and we don't do anything about it because their freedom is always given more consideration and more weight than the freedom of the people who are being threatened by them. That is a huge problem. I'm tired of seeing more weight put towards the freedom of people who menace and threaten and stalk and abuse people than the freedom of those who are being threatened and abused. Part of the reason that I'm so passionate about true crime stories is because I feel that by examining things that have happened in the past, we can do better in the future, and I want this channel and the people who watch it to be a part of that conversation. That's a huge part of what I'm working towards here. We want to make donations to cold storage DNA testing. We want to create a conversation around prevention and not just about what happens in the aftermath of violence. Yes, we like discussing these events because we find them interesting, but I truly believe that people who are interested in true crime, by and large, also want to see more done in the way of prevention. So that's my little old lady lecture for today. Yes, we need to pay more attention to red flags. Sadly, these church-going folks did not do that, and it had unimaginably terrible consequences. Frank McCullough, the bishop of the Mormon ward that the missionaries Mark and Gary were assigned to, told them he did not want them visiting Robert Cleason anymore. He told them that they were relieved of that duty and that he wanted them to stay away from him. So in that way, this man took this seriously and did what was right, and we need to credit him for that. Unfortunately, these two missionaries did not listen. In their zeal to do their duty to God, they felt that they needed to visit Robert one last time. October 28, 1974. Mark and Gary pay their last visit to Robert Cleason. They always saw him on Monday nights for dinner, and they felt they owed him this one last visit, like I said, as he would be expecting them. It's just really, really sad. I'm sure they truly felt they were doing the right thing by being polite and showing up as scheduled. Sometimes, guys, sometimes it's okay not to be polite. Mark and Gary went to the trailer home that Robert Cleason lived in, located in the suburb of Oak Hill, Austin, Texas. No one knows the details of what happened that evening, save for Cleason, but these two young men were never seen again. Mark Fisher and Gary Darley had vanished. The members of the Mormon church where Mark and Gary were assigned became concerned almost immediately. Mormon missionaries are watched closely and have to perform regular check-ins with the person known as their zone leader. When they missed this check-in and people went to their apartment to find it empty, the police were contacted. Police were aware of Robert Cleason and were, of course, aware of this very long rap sheet and his treatment in mental health facilities. Of course, not all people that have mental illness are dangerous. That's a ridiculous notion. But Robert was. They were pretty convinced right off the bat that Cleason was responsible for the missionary's disappearance. They didn't have enough information to get a warrant on their suspicion alone, so they delved into his past and found out that he had illegally purchased a gun. They were able to use that offense to get a search warrant for his property. They waited until Cleason went to church, and then they went to his trailer. As they searched Robert Cleason's home, among the weapons and the piles of pornography and the fake IDs they found, they discovered a wristwatch with blood on it. This was enough to get an arrest warrant, and Cleason was arrested as he exited the church. The search then intensified. Police went into Cleason's taxidermy shed. Inside the shed was a taxidermist's bandsaw. Police could see flesh and blood and hair on the blade of that bandsaw. They removed the particles and the blade and took them in for testing. Now, of course, this was before DNA testing, but they did have some tests back then that told them whether or not family DNA was similar. So samples were taken from both of the young men's families, and it was found that the samples from the saw blade matched family members related to both Mark and Gary. Robert Cleason had murdered both young men and cut them up with a saw. Those of you who have seen Mormon missionaries know that they wear a black name tag. Later in the search, Mark Fisher's missionary name tag was found in Cleason's home with a bullet hole through it. Many believe the young men were forced to run as Cleason hunted them like game. A bloody jumpsuit was also found and taken into custody. Back in the 70s, they couldn't determine if the blood belonged to either of the young men, but later on, that jumpsuit would become useful. 1975. Robert Cleason was put on trial for the murder of Mark Fisher. The prosecution did not feel it had enough evidence to try Cleason for Gary's murder, which seems kind of wild. They were together. They both disappeared. But that's what happened. Robert Cleason was tried and convicted of the murder of Mark Fisher and was sent to death row. November 1977. The appeals process that always takes place in a death row case continued, and in November of 1977, the courts found that the original search warrant was faulty and had to be thrown out. So there went the case against Robert Cleason. Prosecutors declined to retry him because they had no case without that evidence from the house and from the property. Robert Cleason was released from death row, something that almost never happens, and was set free. We're now into the 1980s. Cleason moves back to upstate New York, where he lives at a charity mission, where other residents of the mission report seeing him only for mealtime. He is arrested several times on weapons violations, and the last time he gets out of jail, he leaves the country. Cleason then moved to Barton-upon-Humber, Lincolnshire, England. He married a local woman named Marie Longley, who he met as a pen pal while living in the U.S. Robert acquainted himself with local residents, and he began to amass a huge gun collection. These types and their guns. I own a gun. I don't own 20 guns. In England, he continues with his lies about being CIA, about being a decorated army vet, and one of the men at the local gun club gets suspicious and starts investigating Cleason's past. Here you can see he's actually wearing military medals that he did not earn. This man didn't like Cleason because they had had a little bit of an altercation and Cleason had threatened him at the club one day while shooting. This man had a friend in the police department, and they pulled some strings to get a hold of Cleason's criminal file. They find out that Robert lied on his application for British residency by not divulging his murder conviction. The police then get officially involved and find out Robert has also obtained guns in England illegally. 2000. Robert Cleason is tried and convicted of firearms violations and sentenced to serve 3 years in an English prison. Now, this is an entirely different story, but briefly, his wife, Marie Longley, had basically been living as a prisoner in her own home for a decade. Cleason had stopped letting her see her friends, wouldn't leave her leave the house, regularly threatened her. Ooh, I really don't like this guy. But when Robert was arrested and jailed, she saw her chance to flee. With the help of a friend and neighbor, she disappeared and kind of went underground. She made herself so invisible that for a time, she was considered a missing person. 2001. U.S. authorities learned that Robert Cleason is in English custody. They decide to proceed with new murder charges after additional DNA information was found as technology had progressed significantly. Remember that bloody jumpsuit found in the 70s? It had been kept all those years, and when technology was available, DNA testing was done. Blood on the pants was matched to DNA taken from Mark Fisher's family members. The U.S. then submitted paperwork to begin the extradition process of having Cleason returned to the United States. Now, this is not a short process, but an agreement was reached and U.K. officials agreed to return Robert Cleason to the United States to stand trial with the condition that they would not seek the death penalty against him. April 21st, 2003. On the morning of the 21st, Robert Cleason, age 70, suddenly died in English custody before he could be extradited. His cause of death was ruled to be heart failure. When he died, Kathy Fisher, Mark's mother, said, "We won't have another trial hanging over our heads. That's good. But there won't be any difference as far as closure is concerned. Only if he told us what happened with our son's body. That part is not closed." The families of Mark and Gary will never receive the justice they deserve for the murders of their loved ones, but maybe it does help a little knowing what a miserable life this man led and knowing that he died in prison at only 70 years old. If you would like to know more about this case, Ken Driggs wrote a book called Evil Among Us, and there is also a British-produced documentary called The Real Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I will put links to both in the description of this video so you can watch them if you would like to. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Thank you so much for watching. Your views, your comments, your subscriptions, they mean everything to me. I appreciate you, and I am so glad that you're here. Please stay safe, be kind to each other, and I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.